accession number 20483, Reel 1.
You were born, please?
I was born in Liverpool.
Alan Guy, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Liverpool.
Which year was this?
In 1932.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Liverpool?
Yes, although my main schooling was done in North Wales, due to the fact we were bombed out during the war.
Can you tell me what happened with the bombing out, please?
I was 7 years old when the war started. And to my knowledge, my school was bombed, and therefore I didn't really have any schooling until such times as I went to North Wales. From what I can remember, it all happened one particular weekend in, I know it was what they call the May Blitz in Liverpool. I can't remember I think it was about 1941 or thereabouts, and this particular weekend, my home was hit by a bomb and destroyed. We weren't actually in it. We used to go down to my grandmother's to stay there, the huge cellar which my uncle had converted into a shelter. And we were down there, luckily, when it was hit. And then the following night, an unexploded landmine landed in the street outside. So we had to move from that particular cellar, and we went to some friends of my aunt, I believe, to another house. And I can remember being under the stairs, and to my knowledge, the house was hit by a bomb. I can remember all the ceiling lats coming down on us and being taken out to one of the brick shelters that they used to have out in the street. And I can recall running across the street, and my brother was being carried by my mother, and him shouting out because he lost his shoe. As kids, the bombing and the war didn't really mean much. It was something exciting to us. It was nothing to be really frightened of. I can't recall being frightened at the time anyway. But and then my father was given compassionate leave because we lost our house, and he found us in this particular shelter and insisted that we went to North Wales to live. Wouldn't let us stay in Liverpool any longer because of the bombing.
Compassionate leave from what?
He was in the army. He was in the King's Own, and as a regular soldier.
King's Own what?
It was just called the King's Own. It was an infantry regiment.
King's Liverpool?
It was a Liverpool regiment, yeah, yeah. They called it the King's Own. I think possibly they've changed that regimental name now. It's probably gone by the wayside like so many regiments.
What was the address of the house that was damaged?
That I don't know. I can't recall. We lived in a 43 Tumulty Avenue, T-U-M-I-L-T-Y, Tumulty Avenue, in Liverpool. That was our own house, and then we moved to 20 Wadham Road, W-A-D-H-A-M, in Bootle in Liverpool. But whose house we went to at that stage, I don't know.
Which part of Liverpool was Tumulty?
I'm not sure. That was either Walton or Anfield. I'm not 100% certain, to be quite honest.
So then you went to North Wales?
Then we went to North Wales, yes. We had an aunt, an uncle, who lived in a small cottage in North Wales, and they decided to take us in, where we remained, I think it was for about 12 months. It's only a tiny place, and there was my mum and my brother and myself, and they had two children of their own, fairly grown-up children. And then my mother managed to get hold of a job as a caretaker for a Methodist church. This was the only accommodation we could get. We were caretakers of that particular church, and she used to have to do things like stoke the boilers with coke and so on. Quite a hard job for, a woman by herself, as it were. And we lived there in that particular house until 1953. 3, I think it was, when my dad won a small sum of money on the pools, which was enough to buy a bungalow in Wales.
When you were evacuated to North Wales, what was the address you were evacuated to?
It was Plough Cottage, the Row, in St Asaph, in North Wales. And then the house that we moved to and spent some time in, which is now an auction rooms, I understand, and so is the Methodist Chapel. But that was called Tea Capel, which is T-Y-C-A-P-E-L, in Gemmig Street, G-E-M-I-G, Gemmig Street, St Asaph.
Did the war affect you in North Wales at all?
We were still conscious that the war was going on. There were German planes, obviously, going to Liverpool, who sometimes offloaded any bombs that they may have out in the wilds, as it were. And a plane, a British plane, did actually crash on a mountain, which was, I suppose, about 3 or 4 miles away. I can remember as kids going up the mountain to the wreckage of this plane to see if we could take any bits and pieces off it, as kids would normally do.
Any celebrations at the end of the Second World War?
Yes, there were street parties, which, you know, I think everybody got involved in. All the mothers tried to organise things for the children in the form of some sort of street party.
How did you come to be in the army yourself?
Well, I always wanted to be in the Merchant Navy. My father, prior to being in the army, was in the Merchant Navy, and coming from Liverpool, the Merchant Navy was the thing that all the kids wanted to do. My father, having had time as a steward on some of the big liners, said that most of the time would be spent down in the deck, below decks, and it wasn't such an exciting life as it seemed to be. And I had, after leaving school, started working as a student surveyor, come draftsman, come sanitary inspector. And my father said, well, I'll give you the option, because I was determined to leave home. It was a very, very quiet place. The only thing that of any interest was once a month we had the Magic Lantern Show used to come, and the nearest town was about 5 miles away. So as a kid, I was bored to tears. My dad said, well, you've got the option. He said, if you insist on doing something, I'll let you go in the army and try and go in the same trade as what you're training for at the moment, which was as a sanitary inspector. So at the age of 17, I went to Wrexham and signed on in the regular army, in the Royal Army Medical Corps, as what they called a hygiene assistant, which I think now they call Army Health Officer or something similar.
What was the next step?
Well, the next step was I was sent to Church Crookham, which is not too far from here, to... I think, what was it called, Queen Elizabeth Barracks? But anyway, that was a training regiment, and I spent my usual 3 months training down there, which was quite interesting because at that stage they were developing the flying wing and also developing the flying bedstead, which was, I believe, the forerunner of the present jump jets and so on. So we could see them actually, we've seen them flying while we were doing our initial training. From there, I was posted to Aldershot. I was given the option of going to either Catterick Camp, Aldershot, or to Fort George up in Scotland. I think it was Fort George. I think it was called Fort George. However, Scotland. And I opted for Aldershot. I don't know why. I mean, a military town. Nowadays, I probably wouldn't think of going to a military town. However, the idea was, what, once you had finished your basic training, you had to become a military nurse. You had to become a nursing orderly. That was a requirement. So I was posted to Aldershot, to the Cambridge Military Hospital. And from there, I was transferred to the infectious disease hospital in Aldershot.
What happened to you at the Cambridge Military Hospital?
We did a few just basic anatomy and physiology and so on, and did a certain amount of nursing training. The infectious disease hospital was part of Cambridge Military, so it was more or less an internal posting, as it were.
How had you got on with the initial training?
The initial training, I got on fine. Yes, I don't think I could do it nowadays, but yes, it was quite good and passed without any problems.
And what had been the conditions under which you had signed?
I signed on for 5 years and had to do 7 years in the 7 years in the reserves, five in the colours, seven in the reserves.
What did you think of the quality of the training you were receiving by now?
Well, it's difficult to tell, really. You don't assess the training at that stage, but looking back on it, I think it was pretty good. The basis of the medical training I got, I thought was exceptionally good. Particularly, I had studied at school, I had studied Latin, so the Latin names that were used in the medical side of things weren't too much of a problem for me. They may have been for other guys, but I didn't find it too much of a difficulty.
Had you been to a grammar school?
Yes, I'd gone to St. Asaph Grammar School, where I got the school certificates in 1949.
So what stage in your army career have we reached now? What date is it about?
We're now talking 1950-51. At the infectious disease hospital, I had to do nursing training, basically. I was working as an army nurse, dealing with all types of infectious disease.
What types in particular?
Well, there was one that comes to mind was a case where I was asked to pick a particular patient up and transfer him to a commode. He was an army sergeant, and I was told that his treatment, if he would have accepted injections, would have lasted not too long, but due to the fact he wouldn't take injections and was being treated with tablets, had extended it to many, many months. I wasn't sure what this guy was suffering from, and having taken him back to his bed, asked the matron, and she said he was suffering from leprosy. You can imagine, I was horrified at the time. I had visions of, you know, having a yellow cross painted on my door and, you know, ringing a bell for some length of time. But I was told the incubation period was about 4 years. How true that was, I don't know. But it was a bit worrying at the time, because bearing in mind I was only just, you know, 17, late 17, so... So that stuck in my mind.
Why would he not have injections?
Some religious problem. Whether it was he was a Jehovah Witness or something, I don't know. But that was the story I was given. I can't recall why at the time.
But presumably most of the cases you were dealing with were not leprosy.
Oh, no, there were all sorts of cases. Every type of infectious disease possible. We did have... what was... Yeah. As I say, there were all types of infectious disease. I myself ended up in hospital, in my own hospital, alongside a colleague of mine. We had a ward, they had wards with like glass panels between them, and I had scarlet fever and tonsillitis that I'd picked up from the hospital, and he had measles. Both having picked them up while we were working with the patients who were suffering from it. So, there were risks there, but luckily they weren't too serious, the diseases that we'd picked up.
So your patients were all soldiers?
Yes, yeah.
What happened next?
From there, I was sent to study in army health work, or army hygiene work as they called it then, and I was sent to the Army School of Health in Ashvale, where I trained to become what they called, in those days it was called a hygiene assistant class 3. They had three grades, hygiene assistant 3, 2 and 1. In that particular school we were taught everything there was with relation to army hygiene. There was, we were taught water sampling, we were taught everything to do with rodent control, insect control, how to improvise sanitary appliances, anything really to do with hygiene, similar to what an environmental health officer would do nowadays. It was virtually a training to be the equivalent of today's environmental health officer, only in army barracks. As I say, you need to know all sorts of things, everything to do with rats, mice, how they lived, how to control them, how to catch them, the various diseases carried by them. It was the same with malaria. You would need to know all about mosquitoes, mosquito control, the life history of the mosquito, the life history of various ticks and all sorts of various diseases. For instance, rabies, scabies, any type of disease that was likely to be carried by any type of insect or any type of animal. I can't recall how long that course took, but anyway, I managed to get through the course without any problems, having worked in as a student sanitary inspector. So it wasn't really too much of a difficulty in getting through the exams. Then you were left, you'd qualified, and you had a period when you were waiting to be posted, which was a bit frustrating because you wanted to get out on the road, do what you'd been taught. And I can remember they used to give you menial tasks to carry out. And they had a big field which was, they planted potatoes, and our job was to dig potatoes. And the colonel used to wander around and used to say, you know, how are you getting on, lads, and so on. And I was a bit frustrated and turned around to him and said, well I'm a bit concerned, sir. I said, here I am, a qualified tradesman now. And I'm sitting here digging potatoes when, you know, I could be doing something useful. And he said, well, don't worry about that. He said, I'll sort something out for you. Which was the biggest mistake I've ever made. As most soldiers will say, never volunteer for things. And the following day I was transferred to another job. And that job was shoveling coke in a room. We just had one hole in the wall where the coke was shot in, and I had to dig it and shovel it up to the other side of the room. So he certainly had a sense of humour, which I didn't appreciate, obviously.
This is in Ashvale?
That was in Ashvale, yes, yeah. From then, I was posted to Aldershot to carry out the duties of a hygiene assistant. My recollection is that I was stationed then at a disinfestation centre in Aldershot, where I was still doing a certain amount of study, and my main job involved inspecting various barracks from a hygiene point of view or a health point of view. Didn't stay there very long. Following that, I was posted, where was it now? I think I went up to Chester from there. This would have been now late 51. And Chester wasn't too far from home, bearing in mind I lived in St Asaph in North Wales then, which is about 25 miles away. Wasn't too bad. Chester covered a fairly large area. And they posted me out to a place called Kemmel Camp. Now, Kimmel Camp was a mile from St. Asaph. So a mile from home, I had a lovely little posting, I was given a motorbike, and my job was to cover the whole of the North Wales area doing hygiene inspections.
What were the main hygiene problems in that area that you found?
Well, there weren't many, really. I mean, it was just like the barracks were, although most of them were hutted camps, the standard of hygiene was exceptionally good. It was mainly giving advice as opposed to finding too many problems. I don't recall there being a great number of problems at the time. But I wasn't there for more than a fortnight. And I was told that I was going to be posted. And I asked where. And the sergeant major said to me, well, he said, you've probably never heard of it. He said, but you'll need your skates where you're going. And then he mentioned Korea. And of course, I'd never heard of Korea. But
even though the war was going on?
Well, yes, sir. I mean, I was never one for watching the news. Nowadays, I mean, I watch the news all day long. I suppose that comes with age. But at the age of 17, 18, you're not really too concerned. Consequently, I was then sent down to Aldershot again for a very short period of time before being put onto a boat to be sent out to Japan with a view to finally ending up in Korea. The boat journey itself took 6 weeks. I loved it because due to the fact that I wanted to join the Merchant Navy, the fact that I was going to be on a boat for 6 weeks made my dream come true, really. It was quite an easy little job because I didn't go out with a regiment. In my particular trade, you went out as an individual. Wherever you were posted, you went as an individual, so you always made new friends, and then you were moved on somewhere else. So on the boat, there I was, due to be attached to a field hygiene section when I got out to Korea, went out as an individual, met another guy who was also being posted as an individual, and we managed to get ourselves a little job helping the dentist on board ship. Now, all that he did was to see his patients and do a bit of treatment for maybe a couple of hours a day. So we had the surgery to ourselves for the rest of the day. And that's when my first interest in photography came along, because the guy who I was with by the name of Tom Marshall, who was also a medic, had some knowledge of photography. And there were a number of married families on board who were being dropped off at Singapore on the way through. So we set ourselves up doing developing and printing of films for the married families. And not making a fortune on it, but making just a few pence to see us going, and also giving us an interest as well, because I found out then that although I enjoyed being on ship, it was quite a boring time in between ports. But however, we arrived out in Japan into a port called Kure, K-U-R-E. This must have been February 1952. And we travelled out with, I can remember, the Belgian commandos. And the night before we were due to be unloaded, there was trouble between the British and the Belgians. And it was decided to offload us a night earlier. One of the things that I remember particularly at that time was the fact that they told us that we would have 14 ounces of meat. Now, I'm not sure whether they said that was going to be a day or a week, but having been on rations during the war years, to be told that you were getting that amount of meat was absolutely incredible. And it stuck in my mind all these years, the fact that we were going to get 14 ounces of meat. And we were put in communal barracks, as you would normally be put in a military establishment, but they had ladies who came in and did your ironing, and they cleaned the floor and did all the general cleaning, which was something, once again, that was totally alien to me, having gone through basic training where you were expected to do all these jobs yourself.
Just before you go on,
yeah, sure.
Do you know anything about the reason for the conflict between the British and the Belgians?
There was just general tension, I think, building up, probably. I've no idea. It's probably just a few individuals, and which you know, developed into something a bit bigger. And I wasn't aware myself of there being any animosity between us at all. So I think it was probably something small they were afraid might flare up into something bigger. But nothing more than that, I don't think. So I'd arrived out in Japan, and Tom Marshall, the guy I went out with, had been a prisoner of war in Changi jail for 4.5 years during the Second World War. And he'd been bayoneted in the legs, and he'd had all his teeth knocked out with a rifle butt. And he wasn't at all happy with the Japanese. He was going to be posted there, which I thought was a bit off, really, because having been through what he'd been through. But he had quite a bit of knowledge, obviously, of Japanese customs and so on and so on. And I went round with him for a short period of time, and can remember going into one of these Japanese theatres. I probably wouldn't sit through the type of music nowadays that I sat through then when it was all new. And in this particular occasion, I can remember him suggesting that because it was very, very cold there, he suggested that he knew how to obtain some form of heating in the theatre. And he went away and came back with a little box, and this box was full of hot charcoal. And we sat with this on our laps to keep warm. Now, because I was very hygiene orientated, we had managed, he'd also come back with some peanuts. And I was thinking to myself, well, these peanuts, they could have been handled, and I could get some form of dysentery or something or other. So I decided to put them on top of the charcoal and heat them up to kill off any bacteria, which is the worst thing I could have done, because the next minute the theatre was full of smoke and we were kicked out. But however, as I say, I stayed in the military hospital at Kure for a very short period of time, and then I was posted over to Korea, and Tom Marshall remained in the hospital. My memories of going into Korea itself were arriving at Pusan Harbour to be met by bitter cold. Absolutely terrible cold. I've never been so cold in my life. The onboard ship, they had a time where below decks everything was being cleaned down, and you were kicked onto the top deck and you had to stay up there. We'd arrived in the battle dress that had been issued for World War II use, and no warm weather equipment. So as I say, it was extremely cold, very, very cold. And the smell around Pusan was something to be seen, or to be smelt, to be believed. In Korea, the paddy fields and so on were all fertilised using human manure. So you can imagine wherever you went, you had this constant smell. So
had that been the case in Japan?
I didn't notice it in Japan. Kure itself was a fairly large town. Well, or seaside, well, that's the wrong word, maybe. Seaport would be more the word to describe it. While we were there, we went down to Hiroshima, and we saw the site where the bomb had dropped in Hiroshima, and that was something to remember. the sites that we saw down there. They built it up fairly rapidly, mind you, bearing in mind this was 52, so we were talking, what was it, 6 years since the bomb had dropped. But they, the site where the bomb itself had dropped remained the same, and there were various people showing their injuries and making a few bob out of it, I suppose. And there were various souvenirs being shown.